AOPA looks back on the 7 years since 9/11. A Pentagon memorial honors those who died in the terrorist attacks. And airline travel numbers are declining. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, September 12th, 2008. Yesterday's passing of the 7th anniversary of 9/11 served as an opportunity to look back on events which, while they didn't involve general aviation in any way, still put new limits on our freedoms. Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association President Phil Boyer noted, quote, AOPA and the pilot community have worked hard during the past 7 years to increase general aviation security. General aviation is more secure in large part because the pilot community has a vested interest in protecting their aircraft and airports, unquote. Last week, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff made a related observation during a speech at the Brookings Institution. Quote, the fact is that government, the federal government, or the state government does not need to order people to protect assets when the people themselves place great value on the assets, unquote. AOPA notes the widely acknowledged success of its airport watch program and its efforts to dispel the myth that general aviation airplanes pose a threat to national security. Attempts at the state level to institute flight student background checks have been turned back, redundant regulation which would have created new barriers to becoming a pilot. Boyer, who was observing the 9/11 anniversary for the last time as AOPA president, added, quote, we've made a lot of progress, but pilots cannot become lax. We always need to be looking out for our aircraft and airports, unquote. As darkness fell over the nation's capital Wednesday night, about 200 volunteers were out posting nearly 3,000 full-sized American flags near the site of the Pentagon Memorial, which was officially dedicated on yesterday's 9/11 anniversary. Each flag honored a victim who died at terrorists' hands at the Pentagon, the World Trade Center in New York, and in a field at Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Fluttering from 184 of the flags were ribbons with the names of those killed when American Airlines Flight 77 slammed into the west side of the Pentagon. 59 of the victims were aboard the aircraft. The other 125 were Pentagon employees. Lori Okeson, Programs Director for the Healing Field Foundation that sponsored the display, remarked, quote, Bin Laden thought he could change the face of America that day. And he did. More flags are flying today than ever before, unquote. Paul Swenson, chairman and founder of the Healing Field Foundation, said his organization wants to keep the memory of what happened on 9/11 alive. Quote, these were just people going to work that day, not expecting anything out of the ordinary, and then the world changed. We don't want people to ever forget that moment, unquote. The flags of the Healing Field were taken down last night, but the Pentagon Memorial will be open to the public day and night, every day of the year. This week marked the start of capacity cuts announced earlier in the summer by most major U.S. airlines, but the U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics is out with a monthly report that shows passenger volume has already been declining for months. The report yesterday showed domestic and international passenger volume on scheduled U.S. airlines during the first 6 months of 2008 declined by 0.4% from the same period last year. That's a drop of 1.5 million passengers. In June, the most recent data month, volume was down 2.7% from June of last year. That makes the fourth consecutive monthly decline. In both comparisons, domestic passenger counts were down, but international volume increased. Not only have the airlines shifted their focus toward more profitable international routes, but a weak U.S. dollar has made vacations in America cheaper for foreigners. Southwest Airlines carried more total system and more domestic passengers for the first 6 months than any other U.S. airline, while American Airlines carried more international passengers than any other U.S. carrier. You can find more details on the report at aero-news.net. NASA announced Wednesday the successful completion of the Ares 1 rocket preliminary design review. Starting in 2015, the Ares 1 will launch the Orion Crew Exploration Vehicle, its crew of 4 to 6 astronauts, and small cargo payloads to the International Space Station. The rocket also will be used for missions to explore the moon and beyond in the coming decades. The preliminary design review is the first in more than 35 years for a U.S. rocket that will carry astronauts into space. The review was conducted at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, and evaluated whether the Ares 1's planned technical approach will meet NASA's requirements and allow successful systems integration. The Ares 1 rocket now moves on to the detailed design phase, culminating in a critical design review, which allows for a more thorough review of each system element to ensure the vehicle design can achieve requirements of the Ares program. Up next on ANN, Flight Rights Canada is decried as an empty gesture. When you fly, is it better to be lucky than good? And NASA's Orion crew exploration vehicle goes for a swim. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 12, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Canada's national government has responded to calls for an airline passenger's bill of rights by announcing a program it calls Flight Rights Canada. But political opponents say the program does nothing to further protect the flying public. The Toronto Star reports the proposal, which was introduced September 5th, merely requires putting existing industry requirements in plain language and posting prominent signage at key airports. Canada's Federal Transport Minister, Lawrence Cannon, says the program builds on a 2007 amendment to the Canada Transportation Act that requires domestic airlines to prominently display terms and conditions of carriage at their business offices and on their websites. The measure also creates an informal complaints process within the Canadian Transportation Agency. However, several politicians have called for a more comprehensive passenger's bill of rights. The New Democratic Party's transport critic, Brian Massey, was especially blunt. Quote, "Today's announcement is not even an announcement. There is nothing in this whatsoever," unquote. Massey wants, among other things, an expedited complaint resolution process for air travelers, reform in how airlines advertise fares, and 150% reimbursement for passengers delayed more than 12 hours because of overbooking. The increased focus on the issue follows the sudden shutdown and bankruptcy of Ottawa's Zoom Airlines and is playing out against Conservative Party Prime Minister Stephen Harper's request to dissolve Parliament and hold new government elections October 14th. This next story reminds us that we should always fly within gliding distance of the shore, that we should always make sure to look at the gauges once in a while, and most of all, that it's better to be lucky than good. The San Francisco Chronicle reports Bruce Moody and Matt Barcelona were pretty lucky. They were flying around the Bay Area Wednesday doing aerial photography. About 2 hours after takeoff, their 1979 Cessna 210 suddenly went quiet at 1,500 feet over the water off Emeryville. Moody was the PIC and said he tried to glide to Alameda to land but didn't make it. The Centurion splashed down 500 yards from shore, just north of the Bay Bridge. Fortunately for Moody and Barcelona, drivers waiting in line to pay their tolls on the bridge saw it happen and called 911. And as it turned out, the Coast Guard, Alameda County Sheriff's Department, and the Oakland Police Department had a total of 6 boats conducting a drill and were all less than 2 miles from where the plane went down. The Coast Guard got to the stranded men with a 32-foot inflatable Zodiac boat within 15 minutes of the call. By that time, the paper reports the men were standing on the wing of the submerged plane, and only the tail was still visible above the water. The men were said to be wet and cold, but fine, after warming up for a while under the supervision of medics on Yerba Buena Island. Air Flight Service of Santa Clara, California, the company which owns the plane, is in turn owned by Matt's father, Jack Barcelona, who says he'll work with authorities now on how to recover the plane from the bay. The FAA and NTSB are investigating. Scale models of NASA's Orion crew exploration vehicle recently were tested at the agency's Neutral Buoyancy Laboratory at the Johnson Space Center in Houston and at a wave tank at Texas A&M University in College Station. The testing will allow engineers to develop a full-scale crew training mock-up that will be used for mission training and for creating the crew safety procedures for water-based landings of the Orion crew capsule. The team also tested a new seal design, updated wireless communications, and a prototype flotation collar. A smaller scale model of the Orion was also tested at a wave tank at Texas A&M University. The goal was to determine how the spacecraft reacts to strong waves while it floats in the water. Engineers simulated gale force winds and large waves to ensure the spacecraft would remain upright. Along with the scaled testing, NASA and the United States Navy began fabrication of a full-scale test article that will allow search and rescue divers from the Human Spaceflight Support Team at Kennedy Space Center to begin working with an Orion mock-up in the water. Full-scale testing will take place off the coast of Florida near the Kennedy Space Center come January. The Board of Directors of the Civil Air Patrol Historical Foundation recently elected Lieutenant Colonel Jack Foz of the Colony, Texas, to be the second executive director of the nonprofit foundation, preserving and promoting CAP history. Foz has served as the foundation's deputy director since its creation and was instrumental in initial attempts to install a new exhibit on Civil Air Patrol in the Air Force Museum at Dayton, Ohio. Drew Steckety, who established the foundation in 1997, will remain on the board and serve as an advisor. The foundation has distributed CAP memorabilia and educational materials to thousands of CAP members, veterans, and the interested public. It has assisted restorers of veteran CAP airplanes with accurate information and appropriate insignia, much of it replicated and furnished by the foundation free of charge. The Civil Air Patrol Historical Foundation is CAP's official chartered organization for representing its history. The IRS awarded 501c3 tax-exempt status in 1998, which makes all contributions tax-deductible. Still ahead, the Garmin G600 makes a successful debut in a Beach Baron. NASA partners with a California charter school for its next moon mission. And you can get a private bathroom for $700. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design. Maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, September 12, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Qatar Aviation, located at Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, says its first installation of the new Garmin G600 retrofit glass cockpit into a Beechcraft Baron 55 last week performed flawlessly through all test flights and delivery to the owner. A second G600 retrofit Baron 55 was completed on Monday, and three additional aircraft are currently in process. The Garmin G600 was first unveiled at AirVenture 2006. Qatar calls it a perfect solution for owners looking for the enhanced situational awareness, pilot workload reduction, and safety that a glass cockpit provides without the need of upgrading to a completely new aircraft. The system fits two 6.5-inch diagonal flat panel LCDs into the space of a standard six-pack of primary flight instruments, avoiding costly and time-consuming major panel redesigns or replacement. Qatar says that depending on your panel configuration, installation time can be as little as 2 weeks. In an unprecedented scientific collaboration with a public school, NASA will team with the Lewis Center for Educational Research to lead students worldwide in tracking and monitoring a NASA lunar mission scheduled for launch in early 2009. The project will let students become active participants and hopefully be inspired to be the next generation of U.S. space explorers and scientists. NASA Ames Research Center and Northrop Grumman are spearheading the design and development of the Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, or LCROSS, NASA's first major lunar mission in decades, to determine whether there's water on the moon. Students at the Lewis Center will monitor the spacecraft from their mission control on the Lewis Center campus by controlling a 110-foot diameter radio antenna in Southern California's Mojave Desert. Teachers and students around the world, including homeschooled children, will have the same opportunity to participate in the mission through the Lewis Center's Goldstone Apple Valley Radio Telescope Program, which is a partnership between the Lewis Center and NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. During the mission, which will last for several months, participating students will help monitor the health and status of the spacecraft by tracking its signal. The Lewis Center operates two charter schools in San Bernardino County, California. Rick Piercy, president and CEO, says LCROSS goes way beyond watching space missions on TV like we did in the 1960s. Quote, We are excited that we will be leading students around the world on this pioneering effort that will help rekindle the flame of space exploration in America, unquote. The Lewis Center is the only K-12 school in the country to control day-to-day operations of a large NASA radio telescope. If you've ever traveled Europe, you may know that hostels can provide an economical alternative to hotels, allow you to experience local culture, and introduce you to some interesting characters. All that is if you're willing to share tight quarters in a bathroom with strangers. If that sort of thing doesn't bother you, maybe you're a candidate for the Jumbo Hostel. Jumbo, as in created from a retired Boeing 747 jumbo jet. CNN reports the plane is being refurbished and will open to the public this December. Swedish businessman and entrepreneur Oscar Dios, who has been running hostels in Uppsala, Sweden for the past 5 years, says he's putting 25 rooms in the airliner, which hasn't flown since its previous owner, Transjet Airways, folded in 2002. Dios says, quote, "We were looking to expand the business, but it was more or less impossible to find reasonably priced housing at the airport. The plane was in a terrible state when we first saw it, but we contacted the owners and gave them a fairly good offer, I think," unquote. The old 747 may have been more economical than a new building, but it's still not cheap. Without giving specifics, Dios did confirm the renovation costs will run into six figures. He says the inside will meet building codes, and the look of the outside of the plane will change very little, except for removal of the engines. Even the wings will be retained and used as scenic walkways for views of the airport. So, how much? Well, Dios says each roughly 60-square-foot room will sleep three people and cost about $150 U.S. per night. If you just want to drop by the cafe and walk the wing, expect to pay about $35 for 2 hours. And if you don't want to share a bathroom? Well, now, in the world of hostelry, you're talking a luxury item. You're going to need to reserve the top deck, including the cockpit suite, which comes with a private bathroom, for $700 a night. Dios says he envisions that as a honeymoon suite. You know what? Let us know how that works out when you tell your fiancé you want to spend your wedding night sleeping in a big aluminum tube with 83 of your closest friends. And finally, at long last, there's an advantage to losing your hair. The Associated Press reports that Air New Zealand is offering to pay you to wear a temporary tattoo on the back of your head and stand around in lines at three airports, advertising a new system designed to reduce check-in waiting times. The fake tattoos last about 2 weeks, after which they fade away or can be washed off, and the airline says they'll pay you the equivalent of about $660 U.S. for your time. The carrier's marketing manager, Steve Bayless, told National Radio on Wednesday, quote, "It will be an advantage for them to be bald already," unquote. He says he won't personally be taking advantage of the offer because he's doing okay hair-wise. One would also hope his job pays more than $330 a week. And before you say anything about the injustice of yet another job for men only, Air New Zealand has said nothing of the sort. Apparently, ladies are welcome too. Gee, you know, Sinead O'Connor recently retired. Do you suppose? Nah, probably not. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll meet AOPA's VP of Public Relations, Greg Romano, and Air Safety Foundation VP of Operations, David Wright. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and have a clear and unlimited day.